three,
two,
one,
zero.
And that's how we count the show down.
And those are the numbers from 5 to 0 in reverse order descending, starting with 5.
5. And including Noel starting
us
off.
Oh, God. In engineering school, I used to know people that would say null set instead of zero. Clayton, it's bad out there.
I'd prefer them to say Zed.
Those people are in charge of all society now. All right, take a set.
I will take a set.
Great cold open.
Hello and welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I'm Clayton Ashley.
And I'm Maddie Lipchansky.
And this is week episode. This week's episode.
This is week episode.
This is week episode. This
it's kind of a week episode, I'll say.
We'll talk about that. It's episode 26 of the show Enterprise. It is the first season finale. Shockwave Part 1.
Whoa!
It aired May 22nd, 2002. I'm just going to throw this at you right here, right now. We've already teased we're going to do a bonus episode about Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, be the most brave Star Trek podcast ever and cover a Star Trek or Star Wars movie.
You can't even say it. It's so it's hard. It really is tough.
But I think the other part of that bonus episode will us be doing a little bit of a recap of Season 1, maybe talking about some favorites, some not so favorites.
Ooh, good idea.
Because we are here at the conclusion of the first season of Star Trek Enterprise.
Here we are, Mr. Clayton, at the end of all things.
And, there's some stuff to talk about in the culture. This will be a little bit of a, pin we're putting in things at the beginning of May 2002, mm-hmm. because we won't come back to culture for a couple months. But I think we're going to have something special planned for that, so stay tuned. I've just said a lot of words. How are you doing, Maddie?
I'm doing great. I'm just listening to your words. Sorry, my cat got on my desk, and I was making sure she didn't knock over anything important.
Well, that's great. I'm glad. Yeah. Which
so Frog is here for the season finale. She's really excited.
We're all excited. I wish I was more excited, but
we're just gonna come back in 2 weeks the way we've done it.
Uh-huh.
We're not like taking a break.
No, we're not. We would never do that.
No, we would never do that to you. Not you, Clayton. I'm addressing the listener.
The listener. Mm-hmm. How about some music?
Yeah, let's drift away with the timeless pleasures of, I'm going to assume, Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, I'm actually adapting to what you've done, which I think was really smart and intelligent, which is to go from the bottom up and look at what's new as opposed to the fairly static top 10.
Yeah.
Because, I need a girl. I Need a Girl Part 1 by P. Daddy featuring Usher and Loon is the one inching closer to Ashanti's Foolish.
Okay.
But I think otherwise the top 10 is pretty stable. Eminem did get mm-hmm. in there, but we discussed Eminem last week.
We did. So yeah, very, very stable situation. Almost no regime change. No, it's kind of the opposite of geopolitics.
Right.
Of the last 25 years.
And 2002. I'm going to probably say 2022 at some point. Because that happened 22. When I was just trying to Google this mm-hmm. year. Especially May 22nd, 2002. Damn it.
20. May 2020.
May 2020.
2020.
Grindin' by Clips at 98.
Clips. See, now that's
in the news.
I was going to say, they just came back. Clips.
Did they perform for the Pope or at the Vatican or something? I feel like that's how they saw them in a headline.
No, like Clips, like Pusha T and Malice.
I thought
they just came out with a new album was their thing.
Okay. Okay.
And here in 2025.
Here in 2020.
Which Clips song is on the charts?
Grindin'.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's Clips. That's a Pharrell joint also, I believe.
I didn't make it up. Clips becomes first hip hop artist to perform at the Vatican in Rome.
This is probably because Malice changed his name to No Malice. This is not a joke.
Whoa.
Though he might have changed it back by press time, but maybe that's the maybe he did that so they could perform.
Yeah,
for a Pope.
Is it maybe it's the new Pope? Chicago Pope is a fan. I'm not going to look into this. It's just a fun thing to think about.
Yeah,
96 was Sugar High, Jade Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Something I think people are going to recognize. My Neck, My Back by Kia featuring DSD at 83. I predict that one's going to go higher.
Oh, a cold shot.
A cold shot. Nothing by N-O-R-E. It's an acronym. I miss probably NOR. I wish I knew NOR.
N-O-R-E? Does that stand for something?
I'm guessing. I was hoping you would recognize it.
Sure. Victor James Santiago Jr., better known by his stage name NOR, an acronym for N-word on the run eating.
Ah.
Sure. I'm just not familiar with him nor his old partner Capone, who's a Queens guy.
Well, oh, nice. Well, Queens represent.
This is a real blind spot in my an intellectual lacuna in my rap knowledge of 2002, and for that I apologize.
Yeah.
Sorry to Nor.
We'll try better. Mm-hmm. Try to do better. Drift and Die by Puddle of Mud, 76.
See? I don't recall that song at all, but that band sucks shit, and I hate them.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And they're a real Sinetsky of the sort of bad music that we're going to be locked in with for the next couple of years.
And that's when I hope it doesn't go higher, but it probably will.
We're stuck in that. We were kind of stuck in the mud puddle culturally.
Stuck in a real puddle of mud there. My heart is lost to you, Maddie. I'm sorry, but it's by Brooks and Dunn.
Oh sure. Oh God, Brooks and Dunn. I have nothing to say about them. That's like Walmart country, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's an excellent. That is Walmart country music.
That's what Lawrence, Kansas, our fictional Star Trek Enterprise viewer, is watching or is listening to while he drives to the mall to park his truck outside of the abandoned Circuit City to watch Star Trek Enterprise on a TV the size of like a postage stamp.
Yeah.
That's sort of canonically what's happening with him.
But in Kansas, I think you could hear Kitame Ese Hombre, mm-hmm, by Pular Montenegro.
Sure.
East Topeka had a thriving Latino community. Mm-hmm. Here to Stay by Korn at 72.
Which album is that off of?
I don't know. I'm not going to say I'm not a Korn head.
Untouchables. I don't recall that album even existing. I was a huge Korn head. Oh, it was the one after Issues. See, that's when I dropped off. Okay. See, by this point, because I was big on Korn, Issues and Previous, which is Issues, Follow the Leader, you know, Life is Peachy, like the classic Korn, the Korn self-titled, like those are the ones that I listened to.
Yeah.
But by 2002, I was firmly a punk and I thought Korn was stupid. So this
weren't alone.
I weren't alone. That's for sure.
Weren't.
Which one is the Untouchable? What the fuck is on this record? I don't even remember this at all. Wow, Korn really dropped off the face of the earth. To me.
Yeah, to you. But I predict this will also go higher than 72.
Okay.
And the only other new song on the top 100 was Walking Away by Craig David at 62.
Are you familiar with the work of Craig David?
I wish I was.
It's a guy with two names.
Are you? Sorry, were you asking me that?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, two pals that don't know. Yeah. Craig David.
He's a British singer.
Okay. Good. Well, then I'll just move on.
Welcome to America, Craig David. I got nothing to say to you.
Nothing. Okay, movies I think are pretty stable because of how much of a blockbuster month this May has turned out to be.
Oh,
obviously,
yeah.
We still have Star Wars and Spider-Man duking it out for most of America's attention.
You could say they're Count Dooku-ing it out. Mm-hmm. Would you say... Clayton,
no.
Would you say... I want you to listen to me one more time as I say it. I would say that they are Count Dooku-ing it out. Now, what do you say to that when I say that to you?
Yo, Doc, say that? That didn't even work. I
remember those ads that were like, who da man? Yoda da man.
That was General Grievous. That's the third movie.
It's pronounced Grievous, and it's from the third movie, and it's Yoda flipping around. But the ads spoiled Yoda flipping around, and the ads were like, who da man? Yoda da man.
Oh my God, you're right.
And I was like, that's awesome. And it's so funny that now, like, it is every time a new thing comes out in Star Wars, mm-hmm, every time there's a commercial for it, it's got to look so serious. And back then, under the no problems at all stewardship of old George
and Fox Studios.
Yeah. Yoda the man.
So you could see Star Wars. You could more likely enjoy seeing Spider-Man, but there was actually other options by this point in May. I'm going to dip a little bit into the week that happened after, just because they'd probably get lost otherwise.
Take me on a dip.
Insomnia, Chris Nolan's only directed movie he didn't also have a hand in writing.
Interesting.
You got Al Pacino acting opposite Robin Williams as a villain, kind of against type. This is like an Alaskan detective story, so the time of day and, you know, it's called Insomnia. I watched half of this a long time ago and didn't finish it. I feel bad about that.
Well, don't apologize to me, Clayton. Apologize to Maura Tierney.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry, Maura Tierney.
Yeah, sorry.
You deserve better.
Yeah, well, next time give it a full watch. I've never seen this film either.
Oh, dang. Okay, well, I'll
catch this up was
on.
Is a remake of a Norwegian film?
Yes.
And also it was going to be Jonathan Demme, and then he didn't make it.
I think there was also a point where it was going to be a different director and Harrison Ford in the Al Pacino.
Yeah, Jonathan Demme.
Oh.
Jonathan Demme, who directed Silence of the Lambs.
Yes, right. Oh, damn, that would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Apparently, Chris Nolan saw that Swedish movie.
Norwegian?
Norwegian, sorry. And ever since wanted to make it, like remake it. So, and he did.
Wow.
Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron.
The Stallion of the Cimarron.
Cimarron.
Yeah, was that like a Disney joint?
No. DreamWorks. Animated movie about horses in the Western United States. Interesting thing about this one, though, for a movie where the main character is a horse, is they actually did not have them speak English. This is not a talking animal movie. They entirely make like horse vocalizations and stamping hooves. They make human facial expressions, but otherwise there's just a little bit of narration from Matt Damon as like the main horse. But otherwise,
okay, because you were saying horse vocalizations while I was looking at the cast, and I was like, I'm sorry, did they get Matt Damon to go? Like sometimes you watch something and you're like, wow, I wonder what, like you look at the credits of like some movie, it's like, yeah, they got Alan Tudyk to do a gerbil. Like
that was exactly what I was going to say, is I think it's one of the Disney Moana, maybe there's a chicken and Alan Tudyk is the chicken and he does make chicken.
And he goes, bah!
This is not that. This is, they recorded a lot of horse sounds.
Yeah. Sound the big Star Trek alarm. Oh. James Cromwell as a voice.
Oh, duh.
As the colonel.
Yes, he's the colonel.
Yeah.
Who the horse rebels against.
Yeah,
a little bit of the plot summary. But, you know, I think...
It's got a Michael Horse, who I love. He's the... From Twin Peaks. But he doesn't play a horse. He plays a man.
He doesn't play a horse, no.
Because his name is also... They picked the Michael part of his name. No, he's great. He's one of the cops on Twin Peaks. He rocks. Yeah,
and I have no real opinion about this movie because I've never seen it, but I think there's something impressive about them trying to do a non-animal talking movie about animals. That's harder. That's got to be harder, I imagine. You did bring up J-Lo, and she was actually on the box office.
The box 10, bill.
The box billboard.
What's going on today?
Hot 100, I don't know. Too much or not enough caffeine, one of the two. Mm-hmm. J-Lo was in a drama called Enough about a wife trying to escape domestic violence.
Yeah, but not only is it about a wife, it is like the first, it is like a proto version of those movies where it's like they push some guy too far and he beats the shit out of everybody.
Mm.
It's like Enough is like my recollection of it, and maybe I'm wrong here, is that it is like a dark and gritty Home Alone where she does kind of like turn herself into a killing machine.
Fun. Okay.
Yeah, because Clayton, she's had
enough.
Yeah.
Okay, and the fact that is J-Lo doing some
like... Yeah, she like gets really... She gets like buff in it, I think.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, I'll have to... That I'm going to check out before Insomnia or Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron. Sorry. Cromwell. Mr. Cromwell. Okay, we got a couple more here. About a Boy. This is a drama comedy about single parents and kids from the Weitz brothers. There's two Weitz. I don't know why it's not like the Coen brothers. Why don't we call them the Weitz brothers?
Well, I wonder.
They directed together.
Did they direct it together?
Yeah, it's a...
Well, you need to get... I know that X Brothers, like a directing team title.
Oh,
like
okay.
That, like getting the X Brothers or Daniels or something on the front of your movie is like a DGA. Every time you see a movie credit, some union is determined what that means.
Yes.
Or guild, whatever it is.
The union determines who's brothers.
The union determines who your brother is.
Or sisters.
It's like,
I love that.
Yeah, but you have to apply for like a special dispensation.
Interesting.
Because it is, you could consider it sort of on some level, you're taking less money if it's like one directorial unit.
Yeah.
And like the DGA minimum or whatever. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly why it works this way, but I know that the Coen brothers had to fight for it, which is why a lot of their movies are directed by one or the other, even though they directed it together.
Oh, that too. So what I know from about how important credits can be is the order, the top billing and all that. And it's like, well, if you mush the two directors into one unit, that also kind of eliminates and maybe is the compromise between who goes first.
But yeah. And then there's
more to it than that.
Yeah. And there's also stuff like when you see like written by, story by, and then like a screenplay by, and they're in an order. It's like the order of like who did the edits. Like it's all negotiated stuff that's based on what people make. About a Boy, though. Pretty good. This Nick Hornby novel, right? Yeah, Nick Hornby.
I think so. And the cast is pretty stacked. Hugh Grant.
Well, I mean, the boy himself is my boy. Nick Holt, if I recall.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nicholas Holt. And he is such a angry-looking man. Like, like he has the, like, roiling anger resting face.
Yeah.
He's really good in Juror Number 2. I saw that recently.
Yeah, he's got a very punchable face. My favorite, Nick Holt is The Favorite. In which he plays the most punchable man in human history.
Oh, yes.
There's that scene where like she just like shoves him down a ravine and it's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yes.
Sorry, in this film, Tim Rice plays himself.
I don't know.
Tim Rice, the composer?
Sure.
Toni Collette and
Rachel Weisz are also in it. So it's, good cast.
Rachel Weisz, the single hottest person I've ever seen in real life.
Yeah.
She sat next to me at Momofuku Noodle Bar once at the bar. We were sitting at the bar.
Amazing.
And Rachel Weisz and Darren Aronofsky, when they're still married, they sat down next to us.
What?
And I was just like, looking at her was physically upsetting to me.
YeThat's that tier of celebrity. It's
crazy. Rachel, if you're listening, call me.
All right. So we're gonna hop in the magic box office elevator and drop way down to 50.
please.
Oh, actually, I shouldn't have skipped that low. We're going to 18 first. We're going back up to 18. The importance of being earnest.
Sure.
This is that, Shakespeare adaptation, but it's got big names. Colin Firth, Reese Witherspoon, Judi Dench, director Oliver Parker, who's done some other Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Fine stuff. I didn't even know what number this was, but I was curious about this movie called CQ. It is about a sad French director of a cheesy 1960s sci-fi who falls in love who's having like relationship problems. And then while making this movie falls in love with like the star of this cheesy sci-fi movie. So there's a little Star Trek, crossover there.
Oh,
I feel
tricky.
But it's French. It's a French sci-fi. So it's also
Le Trek is what they call it in France.
But the one I was dropping all the way down to 54, I just think this is a little interesting. It's The Believer. And this is about that KKK member who a New York Times reporter discovered was actually Jewish in the 1960s.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So
they got a movie made of them.
Yeah, it's not huge. It didn't obviously only got to 50, but interesting story there. And I just was going to hat tip to this because it kind of comes back a little bit in the news segment that the following week we're going to get Undercover Brother, which is about
a movie I saw in theaters.
Yeah, it's about a secret agent protecting a black presidential candidate. Topical.
It's a really goofy.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I don't think it is the Zucker Brothers, but it's very Zucker Brothers ass kind of movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the other thing notable, Sum of All Fears.
Oh, we probably have to put that one on the big board.
I think we can put that on the list to visit because what's interesting about it is that it's coming out at the time and you're going to see her in the news talk. I'll just get through TV real quick. Television, because TV was not that interesting this week, other than the fact that this episode was back to Wednesdays.
Oh.
And that meant it did. I mean, we talked about this. We had the season finale of the disgusting
The vile Dawson.
Vile Dawson's Creek. So we don't have to worry about them anymore.
Our enemies, Dawson.
New enemy is Felicity, and they got...
No, I like Felicity.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's
I mean,
not.
I'm watching The Americans right now, so Kerry Russell is sort of an emotional support.
People talk about top three TV shows, and The Americans does not get in there enough.
I'm on episode 4 of the first season right now.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, this is not obviously not a show where we talk about the show The Americans.
Uh-huh.
But let me tell you about the first 4 episodes of the show The Americans.
Oh, you got to the Reagan assassination episode. Or it's kind
that's
of
one, that's the one we just finished.
Oh, I love that one.
Oh, that episode rocks. The show The Americans. I'm issuing Maddie's stamp of approval if you want to play like a sort of like a junk.
Yes. One of the first best episode, like first episodes of a series.
Yeah, incredible pilot.
Yes. But also they knew exactly how long the show was going to be, so they got to end it on their own terms. Incredible ending. Just such a good show.
I'm hyped to watch it.
They got the weirdest thing where they got to the end of season 4 and got a renewal for 2 more seasons. And they're like, that's how we're going to wrap it up. So they had 2 seasons. Good show.
Good show.
Back to 2002. Star Trek Enterprise crushes Felicity, crushes Candid Camera on PAX. Doesn't get any farther than that because it's on Wednesdays. It's competing with The Simpsons.
Oh.
Which, frankly, didn't do that great. I mean, it got a...
Wait, The Simpsons was on Sundays, wasn't it?
But it's, I guess, this is just a re-airing.
It's a rerun of The Simpsons. Because I was going to say, Simpsons was Sunday nights, like my whole life.
Exactly. Yeah. And this, maybe, okay, you're right. We have been on Wednesdays, but this is the what's airing got a little change because things are ending. So Simpsons
summer,
Fox,
yeah.
Summer broadcast. It's but rating of 5, share 9, viewers 8.2, to Star Trek Enterprise's season finale rating of 3.3, share 6, viewers 5.3.
Oh, what Simpsons episode, dare I ask?
Papa's got a brand new badge. I don't even remember that.
I don't remember that. I mean, this is probably past my watching. This is season 13.
Oof.
No, I must have been still watching it.
It's on the downward trend by that point, definitely.
I mean, it's way on the downward trend.
I think I might be like, I think it was okay till 11. Like, I kind of feel like it peaks, definitely. But it's a slow descent, and then it really starts going down.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's like the one where... I don't know, man. Who cares? It's fine.
Okay. It was also up against... I this didn't even like...
I don't know why I got so sad reading the plot of this one.
Okay. My wife and kids is, I think, one of the few things that we have seen here a lot at this time. But the other two things are new. We have Academy of Country Music Awards.
Oh, sure. I mean, because that's now... Country music is going mainstream.
Exactly.
It is that's now CBS. Important... that we all care about country music because the nation has taken off the sort of the urbanist, the rootless cosmopolitan hat of the go-go 90s and has put on the somber cowboy hat of the 2000s.
Stepping into a very large truck.
We've stepped into a big truck. We put on big shoes. We got in the big truck and we drove to the dying mall.
And this is the thing where I'm like, what is Lawrence going to watch? Or is an award show too much for him even?
I think Lawrence Kansas, let's call him Larry. I think Larry, Larry K. I think he...
Would it be Larry L?
What?
Never Kansas? Mind. oh, that's a short name for Lawrence. I got it.
Holy mackerel, buddy. Anyways,
my college town was Larrytown.
Okay. Okay. I think my friend Lawrence, Larry K, I think he would think that the Country Music Awards are too, like, we're patting ourselves on the back a little too much.
Oh, yeah.
Like, an industry award, a red carpet does not appeal to him.
Mm-hmm.
His wife is at home watching. He is, of course, in the truck watching Star Trek Enterprise because he loves our show. He loves to watch it.
So I was just curious what was the big deal at this award show?
Mm-hmm.
Brooks and Dunn, Entertainer Brooks of the Year.
And Dunn.
But I would have enjoyed this. The album of the year was Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Speaking of the Coen Brothers.
So that was, I mean, Jesus. So they're doing the Coens on Blank Check right now. They were talking about it. And she's like, I forgot that album went like platinum 85 times. Like it was like the most popular album of the year. It won Grammys and shit. Like it's just, I mean, it's a great album, but it's just like so funny that it's like, yeah, this is how we got like the T-Bone Burnettissance.
But if that wasn't enough for you, you also could have watched on NBC Most Outrageous Game Show Moments.
Oh, man, the summer is crazy.
Wait. Okay. That was second to the Academy of Country Music Awards in ratings.
Wow.
Beautiful. Wow. I mean, you can debate a couple things.
Yeah.
That is the world of TV on Wednesday, 22nd of May, 2002.
Tremendous.
But some other things are going on in the world that I feel like are important to talk about. The stock market, still having a bad time. India and Pakistan, they're doing some saber rattling. But in Washington, D.C., Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld issued a grim warning. It is only a matter of time before terrorists such as Osama bin Laden get nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons.
The dirty bomb could be anywhere in America.
This story also noted that Rumsfeld refused to discuss the details of the threats. So,
he was so cool.
This was like, I thought this was a notable thing because this is the start of this drumbeat of, well, what if they get nukes? What if they get bio bombs? Which I think is interesting with some of all fears, because that's kind of what that movie's about. What if some terrorist gets a nuke? It's notably, I was like, I think it's former Russian terrorist, like something. It's definitely not in the oeuvre of what this era's new enemies of America are, but it's
no,
like...
No, because the book is from like 1991.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's got a very... Yeah, we can talk about this, but it's very like a different kind of thing. I mean, it was clearly in production...
Right.
For like 10 years, this movie. Mm-hmm. But it just hit.
It hit right after the government's actually starting to be... And, you know, that it's not like it's... the fault of the people who made that movie, but it definitely is the kind of culture that aids the message they're trying to bring, which is, do you know how scary it would be if they got a nuke? Like,
yeah, I mean, it would
do you realize how serious this is?
Right. I mean, it would be scary.
It would be scary. How likely was it actually? How much were they exaggerating?
Extremely.
In another and story, very. President Bush said yesterday, the best way to defend America against homicide bombers. As in, you need to stop them before they can strike. But this is another thing where this had, just a couple days ago, there had been in a suicide bomber who disguised himself as an Israeli soldier, and they killed two, wounded 50. So you had this note in this story where FBI Director Robert Mueller, hey, we know that name, said that there's like warnings about this kind of style of suicide bomber coming to America. So you've got like warnings about nukes. You've got warnings about there could just be a suicide bomber strolling around. Like, we are now entering this part of 2002, it feels like.
Yeah. For sure.
And just a final note.
Yeah.
May 28th, just a couple days after this episode. It was like a week after this episode, but the final steel beam is cut down and removed at the World Trade Center site in a small ceremony that marks the end of the recovery effort. There would the Freedom Tower, the one World Trade Center, would not open until 2014.
Yeah, the man, I got a couple of things about that, which is this is what makes the NYPD mad they saw the recovery effort a couple months earlier. Giuliani is no longer the mayor of New York City at this point. Bloomberg has been sworn in this January. But they saw the recovery effort, what many first responders say was pretty short. Once they recovered the gold to the Trade Center, because there was a big bank branch there.
Extremely important people know about the gold. Yeah, never not tell people about the gold.
Yeah, yeah. And then the last column, as it's called, is still kind of like in situ at the museum that's there. The museum that I've never been to once it opened. But in a previous life, I don't know if I've told this story on the show before. I must have. Maybe not.
So, did you get in early or something? Or like,
I worked on it. I worked on the museum.
On it.
And I had to go into the 9/11 pit to go take a temperature sensor reading on the last column. I've told this on the show. I must have. But yeah, and I went in there and it was like a Monday and all the construction workers had off. So I was in there alone.
My goodness.
Anyways.
Huh. May 22nd, 2002. I am going to take my leave from the captain's chair now. It's your turn. Mm-hmm. Oh, I saluted.
Okay, thank you so much. So, the name of this episode, as we mentioned, is Shockwave. Pretty cool sounding name.
Part one.
So we got a cold open. The Enterprise is en route to some colony, Paragon 2, or whatever.
Paraga?
Paragon. Paragon. I don't fucking, who cares? T'Pol?
Good.
They're on their way to Paragon 2. And they're like hanging out, like talking about the Paragon society. And like, it used to be a mining colony, and now it's got like 3,600 people. It's matriarchal.
Cool.
And Tucker and Archer are like, not interested. Girls drool. Boys rule.
T'Pol's like, they're starting to let the men do some other
things. They're starting
things.
To get the men rights. And the boys are like, I hate it. Yeah. So that's fine. Anyways, like, hey, but it's a mining operation and the atmosphere is full of science gas.
Yeah.
And you have to be careful igniting the engines with the science juice so it doesn't make the science gas explode.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And we have to make sure that there's not too much science gas in the atmosphere.
Too much science gas is bad. Because of the mining.
Because the interaction science. It has with the science juice that runs the engines.
Science juice, yes.
So anyways, immediately Reed goes to pilot a shuttle down to the colony to like go visit them. Oh, and this is also like crucial, like the furthest they've ever been out. And Archer's talking right. about the historicity of this. Anyways, Malcolm goes to pilot the shuttle down and the planet fucking explodes.
They blow up the planet.
And then Reed is like, did I do that?
It just occurred to me that they did set up like this cool matriarchal society and they
kill everyone.
It's bad. I mean,
yeah. Sorry to producer Clayton for doing that.
No. It's good.
So, okay. And then we hit that button that tells us that we hear the theme song. Hold on 1 second.
Rock.
She knocked over a plant. Back. And we're back. Episode begins. This is our stupidest episode ever.
That plant was critical to this recording.
If I didn't lift the plant, well, now it's in the show. If I didn't lift the plant up, my cat would have knocked the plant onto the ground. This is what happens when my wife is out of the house and I'm recording and I don't shut my studio door, which then means I got a cat in here and I forgot about that. But I was like all excited to not have to shut my door so it doesn't become so hot in here. It's a little peek behind the curtain for everybody.
Producer.
Anyways, it's been a long time getting to introduce the episode. We're here. So anyways, they do some scans. Tucker's unconscious. Phlox is like, there's frog knocking over my fan.
Great.
Okay.
Frog, I don't think Frog understands how sad everyone is. Everyone's so sad.
Everyone's so sad about the colony. Anyways, so Archer is like, hey, everybody, what happened here? And they do some scans, and everybody's dead. Hoshi's like, they all died. Tucker has a concussion.
I watched them die. I was looking at it.
Yeah, I was looking through my binoculars. I watched the whole planet explode. It's unclear to me how Reed survived.
He like flew forward and like bashed his head on the, it looked like, or something.
Yeah. And then he gets a, anyways, you know, T'Pol is like, everybody calm down and let's like investigate it Vulcan style.
Mm-hmm.
So Archer is like mad at everybody. Like, hey, what's going on here? What happened? And T'Pol is like, I'm looking at the logs. And, Tucker is like, oh, sorry. You know, actually, it's so weird because we think this was because of the science gas and the science juice interacting poorly, but the science gas levels were actually lower, were even lower than they could have been. So that wasn't the issue. So like what happened then?
We followed all the protocols on science juice. We followed all the protocols on explosion gas. What went wrong here? It doesn't make sense. They keep going through it and they're very sad and Archer is really depressed.
Yeah, the first half of this episode is so talky.
Yeah, and I guess this is to show T'Pol is kind of acting normal, because this is maybe the benefit of not having emotions, is even in the face of murdering 200 people, you can still function.
3,600 people.
Oh, sorry, it was in the thousands. It started at 200. Jesus.
Yeah, a lot of people died. 3,600 people died, T'Pol. But then they have to call Dad on Earth, Admiral Forrest, and Father says that, you know, I got to go talk to the command council about this. And he's like, Archer, you make sure everybody in the crew doesn't go insane with sadness. And then, you know, Archer, like, talks to T'Pol, and she has to, like, cheer him up. And then she goes to Phlox, and then and she's like, I'm not sure this guy's still fit for command. And Phlox is like, yeah, but, like, you know, you're Vulcan.
Yeah.
It's different for you.
Humans get really choked up about accidentally killing.
Yeah, there's an ancient sort of concept in human language that means to live. To paraphrase an old tweet. And it's considered bad in human society to die.
Or to cause someone to die, you know.
To cause someone to die is bad.
It's generally.
Yeah. Anyways, Forrest calls the Enterprise back and you know, and says, like, hey, man, you got to come home. You got to, Saval, the Vulcan guy who's my daddy, says, you guys got to come home. I'm sorry.
He's so mad.
He's so mad at you, and you got to come home. And then T'Pol and Phlox, we're going to, like, go meet up with a Vulcan ship to leave, to go back to wherever they go.
So notably in Archer delivering this news to Trip and T'Pol that, like, the mission's canceled, we're going home, he's like, it's gonna push human exploration back like 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, like we won't be back out here for another decade.
Yeah.
And isn't that so sad? And I, the viewer at home, am just out of my mind with grief over the show only going one season, I think.
It really does feel like this is a series finale.
Yes,
like,
almost,
this is it.
Yes,
it's fucked up.
Yeah. Like, wow, they really, the whole thing was aborted.
Well, we get Hoshi and Travis also talking about, like, post Enterprise life, and I think that's what really made me think, like, this is the kind of thing you talk about when you're like, okay, we're done, what are you gonna do after the series? Like,
yeah, like it's like this is like Hoshi and Mayweather, like, planning their spinoff.
Exactly. Yeah. He's gonna go captain a boomer, or and she's gonna go back to teaching in Rainforest University. But it was interesting to me, they also,
frogs.
Like, yeah, they also find out that they're not popular back on Earth.
Yeah, like, just, everyone back home thinks all we do is fuck up. And it's like, well, kinda. Anyways, Reed finds an unusual signal on the shuttle, on the hull of the shuttle. T'Pol brings this to Archer. Oh, this is when she cheers him up. I'm sorry. And he's like, and she's just kind of like, you got to go tell the high command, you know, like, you have to go dispute their decision because there's new information that has come to light. And he's like, I don't know. I'm sad about it.
Yeah, this is less her cheering him up to me and more like
T'Pol. Sound the alarm.
But T'Pol.
T'Pol.
Topology.
She is just really getting tired of Archer's sad sack shit.
She's annoyed
at him at this point, and it's just kind of like, is this what it means to be like when humans say you're sad for you're pitting yourself? It's like, look, you gotta fight for this.
Yeah,
if you fight for it with your people, I'll fight for it with my people. Like, come on,
dude, get it together. Anyways, he's like, this is the first time a Vulcan ever tried to cheer up a human. And she's like, I don't care. Goodbye.
Yeah.
He goes to bed. He gets into bed. Archer does. And he shuts out the lights. And he goes like, Porthos, get into bed, baby. And he's like, Porthos, where are you, dude? And he turns the light on. And Clayton?
Mm-hmm.
He's not on the Enterprise anymore.
He's not.
No, he's in an apartment. And the phone rings. And it's Tucker, and he's like, you want to get dinner? And Archer, like, remembers exactly the sentence that was about to be said to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, God, this is 10 months ago, the day before the pilot episode of Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah.
Who says the day before Klang was brought to Starfleet Medical? And I'm like, who's Klang? And then I had to remember, of course, Klang is the
yeah.
It's the impetus of
our beloved broken Sleepy bow. Klang.
Sleepy Klang.
I'll say, okay. The other thing about this is we've talked about what's led up to this point. It's like been 20 minutes. It's been 20 minutes of like sad people doing Star Trek science jargon. That's been the majority of the intro.
It's been kind of a boring episode.
And I'll say that maybe just because something was finally happened, I was really into it when we turn around and there's Daniels.
My Manuals. There he is. So Daniels appears. Daniels, by the way, is dead.
Mm-hmm. The last time we saw him.
He was dead.
Technically, the last time we saw him was on Galaxy Quest, I think, but...
That's correct. But he's like, Daniels is like, okay, I came to you here because it's the only place I can talk to you without any of the factions listening. But like, somebody violated the temporal accords. That explosion on Purgan... Purgan 2.
Pradana.
Wasn't supposed to happen at all because it resulted in the... Like it meant the Enterprise's mission got aborted. Mm-hmm. So someone's fucking with the timeline. They're violating the accords, Clayton. This is the worst thing that's ever happened.
And yeah, maybe because I kind of remembered where this was heading. I kind of got into like, okay, we've been saying a lot that this is the temporal Cold War. So what that kind of implies is that no one wants to fight because if they do, they'll use the big weapon and then everyone's dead. Everyone's screwed. It's bad. You don't want to get to that point. So I feel like they're trying to, and I don't think they do a great job of it. This is only because I know this now is the point. They're trying to imply that like someone used a nuke, someone used a time nuke. Like this is bad.
Like someone like took a big chunk out of the timeline.
Yeah.
In like, a way that you're not supposed to.
Exactly. So I was just... I needed something. This episode was so boring. I was like, okay, I see what they're doing here. I am into it. I like the timey-wimey stuff, especially when it's the way they're talking here. I like how Daniels is like, Archer points out, like, you're dead. And he's like, not yet. And then he's like, well, wait, if I'm here, then who's getting into the bed on Enterprise? And he's like, you are.
He's like, well, it hasn't happened yet. And
it's
he's like well, where am I right now? And he's like, I'm talking to you. And he's like, what?
The time stuff is the best when it's vague and weird like that.
Yeah.
And I like it here for that reason.
Yes, of course. So Daniels is like, come talk to me. I will. I got like some info for you. And he does the thing that you know on TV shows where someone starts like whispering like. So we cut. We're back in the present. Archer wakes up and he's like, so here's what we got to do. He doesn't tell anybody he talked to Daniels, right? He just says okay, we got to like figure out how to like uncloak ships, something about quantum beacons.
Yeah.
I don't fucking know. And he's like, he tells him to do a bunch of Star Trek shit. Yeah. Right. And then they get back towards, and they go back to Paragon 2.
And I guess notably, his personality has completely changed. He is all like, do this, do that. Everybody, you know what your orders should do? Get, like, he is not sad anymore.
Yeah. And then everyone's like looking at him like, what happened to you? Why? I thought you were sad. And he's like, it wasn't our fault, baby. Yeah. Everything's fine. Those people are dead, but it's not my problem.
But it's not our fault.
Which is so funny to me. Anyways, so Archer and Tucker are then talking about like quantum engineering.
Yep.
And Tucker's like, I don't understand this at all. And Archer's like, neither do I. Daniels told me.
Yeah. Obviously, you just got to swap the positron beam. Then the quantum nodes can reconfigure. This is a lot of Star Trek.
Swap the gobos around for gubulons, then it's easy to swap the beam of neutrons for cromulents. What?
But I guess what's interesting here is for once, most of the other characters in the show don't know what he's talking about because it's from the future.
Yeah. From the far future. So he tells Tucker that he talked to Daniels, and Daniels is like, Tucker's like, cool. He goes, Archer goes to Sato and to Paul, and he's like, you have to figure out how to talk to this this weird device that we found on the shuttle, you know, because they went and looked at the shuttle, and there's a weird device. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you're going to be looking at Suliban data, and tells him about Daniels. Mm-hmm. And to Paul is like, Daniels, time travel's not real.
Yeah, Daniels is dead. Yeah, yeah.
And Archer's like, I talked to him 10 months ago. Time travel is real. And T'Pol's like, all right, bud, whatever. Yeah. But he's like, you know, everything has worked out so far, so we just kind of got to go along with it. They go to, Reed and Archer go to the quarters that they, like, sealed off.
Yep.
And they to get the specifications of a cloaked Suliban ship.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And Archer keeps warning Malcolm, like, there's a ton of stuff on here. We're just taking the cloaked Suliban ship. Nothing else.
Don't look at anything else.
Yeah.
We don't want to violate any accords.
And also in this scene, I liked where Malcolm asks, like, well, wait, if we do this, why aren't the Suliban just going to come after us? And Archer's response is, it's like those old Bible movies. It wasn't written. Interesting, because it's going to come back.
But, yeah, there's a couple of things here also where he's like, an old Bible movie. I'm like, are you still watching old Bible movies in the 23rd century? Also, he says at one point, he says that Daniels is on his predictions batting 1,000. Now it is Star Trek canon per Deep Space Nine that nobody really cares about baseball anymore. So I need to know.
Oh. Well, Deep Space Nine is another like 300 years, right?
It's another 150 years, I think.
It's only 150? Okay.
Anyways, I would like to know.
I would, yeah. That's a bummer. I know baseball lasts.
Listen, I know baseball exists, but like the whole thing is that Cisco is presented as like a freak.
Yeah,
for caring about baseball.
Yeah.
Anywho, what happens after that? They get back to the planet, and Archer is like, Travis, you got to go to this other system because Daniels told us to go find the ship there.
Yeah. It's like nearby.
It's just some nearby system. And they go and they see and they like launch these beacons that they've now configured and they detect a Suliban ship. But they can see it, but it doesn't know that they see it. And they get close and then the ship is like, oh shit, they charge their weapons. They fire on the Suliban ship and they like isolatedly take out like their cloaking device and their whatever, their drive or whatever.
Because they got the schematics, they can pinpoint every one of those systems.
Exactly. And so they, you know, they they dock with the ship, right? To go, they sound like an assault team. And it's Archer and Tucker and T'Pol. And
not their security officer,
and definitely their captain goes, which is really smart.
Know, of course.
Yeah. And they go out and they throw like a grenade into the ship. Yeah.
I just wrote down here action, lasers, action, cloak Suliban, data disks, explosions, escape. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Like, you know, a bunch of Suliban are stunned or killed and they whatever. And they get these disks.
This is their whiz bang budget scene for the finale.
Yeah, and it's short and it sucks ass. Well, but we're into the final stretch of the episode now. So T'Pol and Hoshi are able to like get into the data disks, and it says that the Suliban ship got the cloaked one got really close to the Enterprise when it was orbiting the planet they exploded. And it looks like the Suliban ship docked with their shuttle pod. Attached a device and got out of there. And Archer's like, thank God I can call Admiral Forrest and tell him this.
Why is there like, why do the Suliban have security cam footage of their own sabotage? I don't get.
Well, Clayton, otherwise the episode wouldn't work very well. Now,
yeah.
So think about that next time. Also, there's like those kinds of questions.
Kind of a funny thing because we watched Jason X for a bonus episode. Check out the Patreon.
Oh, Patreon.
When they were escaping. Yeah, when they were escaping in their shuttle pod, the Suliban wouldn't release the docking clamp.
Yeah. Oh, very. Shades of.
And an exact same situation that happened in Jason X, except that one was very pessimistic about what would happen in that situation, where the ship would just slam into the underbelly of the craft it's attached to. Here, they just rip it off the docking clamp, and then a couple Suliban terrible CGI like float into space. But
it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Oh, so Archer's like, we got to go to this Vulcan ship to like tell them what's going on. So they never like name the Vulcan ship, which is so funny to me. They just keep saying the Vulcan ship, which feels like they forgot to do some stuff back. And then we see the Suliban. We see our old pal, Silic.
So, and the cloaked ship, Oh, hi, Frog. The cloaked ship, the Sulon ship, I think is boring. I think they could have done something cooler there. But then
yeah, it sucks.
And when we're reminded of like, oh, they did kind of have a like design language for the Suliban. And that's what this giant space station is, all these little pods attached to it, like a, I don't know, like a bacteria or something. It's cool. And I liked that. And I wish they kind of kept that theme in all their ships. But I don't know. Their other ship looks like it'd be from Star Wars or something.
Ugh, I hate Star generic. Wars. Stupid Star Wars. I'll never watch a Star Wars movie. So Silic is talking to the mysterious figure. What does the Memory Alpha always call it? They always call the humanoid figure.
The humanoid which we hilariously was never confirmed who he was, but apparently they wanted to maybe make that Archer in the future.
Stupid.
Don't read into that because that's never canonized, but that is where they were going with it.
Stupid alert. Anyways, the figure is like, so like you got to capture Archer, but do not delay the Enterprise because as we know now, delaying the Enterprise violates the temporal whatever.
Well, there's a little discussion here about like somebody used information they shouldn't have had. Somebody else violated the cords.
Yeah.
So I'm mad about it. Silic, bring me Archer. Like,
yeah. And he's like, don't fail me again. Classic sort of shadowy figure talk to tell someone not to fail you again. Meanwhile, T'Pol is like, okay, time travel doesn't exist.
What's her little phrase?
The Vulcan Science Directorate has concluded that time travel is impossible.
Yes. She said that multiple times in other episodes. She says it again here.
She loves to say it. But then they're about to try to leave, but they have warp problems, and all of a sudden they're surrounded by cell ships, the Sulaban ships, right?
And, yeah, just the little guys, just like
yeah, they're called cell like ships, I believe.
Cell ships, cool.
Cell ships,
because
they're
like they're being escorted by a bunch
yes.
of them.
And they get a call from Mr. Silic, saying they like then we talk to Archer, and Archer's like, "I can't trust you to like leave my ship alone," but Silic's like, "Don't worry, no harm will come to you," and he's like, "Okay." T'Pol, I'm putting you in command. Crew, everybody follow T'Pol. She's the captain in my absence. And then he goes to like go to the shuttle.
Before he leaves, though, he says something, and because they again just reiterated it with their T'Pol and Archer's conversation about time travel, where Archer is emphatic. It's like, here's all the reasons it happened. Obviously, I didn't know this. Like, how could I know this? XX. And T'Pol just keeps going, like, I can't explain it, but the science director has determined that time travel is impossible. Here, before Archer leaves, he's like, hey, T'Pol, just remember that disagreement we had. Try to have an open mind about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hint, hint.
Hint, hint. Remember, if there's a part two of this episode, try to change your mind. exactly. So he goes, like, he leaves the bridge.
He gets in the turbo lift, which they never use in this series,
use it. Like, yeah, it's very strange. He gets in the turbo lift, he leaves. He leaves the bridge. And then Silic is like, hey, where's this fucking guy? He's not here. Then he hails the Enterprise. He's like, I'm going to kill you if you don't give me this guy. Where is he? And they're like, he's not on the ship. They like scan the ship. He's not there.
Yeah, check like, your ships. We don't
check your ship. We don't have this fucking guy. And then we see Archer. And he's not, he's not in the turbo lift. He's in like some weird wreckage. He's in like a weird like hallway.
That's not the Enterprise.
No.
Enterprise is like, a spaceship in a building.
And he's like, I'm in a building? And it's like everything's destroyed. And Daniels is there. But Daniels is all fucked up. Like he's like scared looking. Like normally
he's scared. Yes.
Normally he appears to Archer in an Enterprise uniform.
Mm-hmm.
But not in this one. He's in his weird future outfit, which looks like some HR Giger shit.
Cool future costume.
He's in his cool future outfit. And he's like, I had to bring you here to protect you, like I was told to. Like, you weren't supposed to get on the Sulaban ship. It was going to cause problems, so I brought you here instead, which, whatever. And he's like, but it clearly didn't work because they look out the window and, like, everything's in ruins.
Yeah. He's like, 30 minutes ago, I had breakfast in the room back there, and now it looks like this. He's like, he does not know what happened.
Yeah, but he's like, this must have been a long time ago. Like, I don't know what happened, but it didn't happen just now. It happened a long time ago. I don't know when.
Mm-hmm.
And Archer's like, okay, no problem, just send me back. And he's like, there's no more time portals, they're all gone,
all our equipment, there's no way to send you back
to be continued.
And I'll say, that's a series, that's a finale ending. That's a, I guess, season finale ending. That's, yeah, that was pretty good.
Pretty good.
Not good for 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Got its hooks in me midway through. And then there's some really good stuff here at the very end.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like the last, I think what happened here, Clayton, is they had one really good episode.
And they had to stretch it into two.
And they stretched it out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And this makes me very curious for how it follows it up. Because I remembered, I think basically every... no, actually, I'm wrong, because we know exactly what the next season finale is about. But I feel like this one and another one are about time travel.
Yeah.
And the other time travel one is even wackier. But this one is in some ways so restrained. Like, I don't know why they didn't make a bigger deal at the beginning. Like, what would have been the cost of the disaster being to someone we knew? Like, what if they blew up accidentally a Andorian ship and it's starting a Vulcan Andorian hot war and like it's real bad? So it's the stakes are higher, because obviously we know what the stakes are at the end. It's the future, but we don't care about that or know about that. It would have just hit harder if immediately there were like stakes here, and then it was like, oh, you think that's bad, this is ruining everything.
Yeah,
and I think that's what they're trying to get at, but we just, you know, it's such a dry, boring beginning that's not sold very well.
I guess they just didn't want to, fucking knows, it's like, it's like kill a bunch of people we never see,
mm-hmm,
very strange,
or care about or have ever met, and species is new. It's just like not a, and it's also, it feels like such a weird, like, we ignited gas in the atmosphere for, I guess there's something to like, oh, this looks like an industrial accident, like that they foolishly did something wrong.
Yeah,
but I was so ready to be like, this is such a boring finale, and then it got me back.
Yeah, they got me by the end.
Wow, in the end.
You know, that's all that matters.
And if you want to hear what we think about the season, why not take a little journey over to the Patreon and give us a subscribe. You'll get a lot of bonus stuff already, and we were really hyping this Star Wars Star Trek crossover.
Yeah, if I wanted to go to the Patreon, Clayton, what would I type into my URL bar on my computer?
Patreon.com slash. I think it is just Temporal Culture.
Yeah, I was going to say go to temporalculturewar.com.
Yeah, that's the one.
Which redirects.
I was just making sure Temporal. Oh, you're right. Damn it.
I spent all that $9 on that website. And this is how you
And look at that beautiful URL sending me right to the Patreon.
Wow,
I love that.
Incredible. I had to go configure the fucking... I had to go point the thing in the correct, what's it called? The stupid protocol that always goofs up when you try to, my joke sucks. I don't have it. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Oh, we used all our energy up on this episode.
I used all my energy watching this bad episode of Star Trek.
But we do it all for you, the listener.
Yeah. Yeah.
This has been Temporal Culture.
It has. I've been, we, Clayton, just real quick. We did it. Uh-huh. We did one season of this.
We did a
show.
Season. 30 episodes. Some of those bonus, some not.
Yeah, but we did a whole season of this show. Pretty cool.
I didn't know that happened.
And it's all thanks to you, the listener. Anyways.
I thought you were talking about me, because I was going to say, no, it's you too.
No, it's thanks to me. It's thanks to me and the listener. You're not involved.
Got it. Okay.
I've been Maddie Lipchansky.
Let's go.
Let's go.